Ask the Expert on The Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Standard Life. Retirement needs to be redefined. And as retirement experts, we're on a mission to do it.
It's not the most enjoyable topic to think about, but organising your inheritance is one of the most important financial decisions that you can make, and there are many pitfalls along the way. So to talk through the do's and don'ts of drafting a will is our Monday expert, Mark Felton of Felton McKnight Solicitors. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, when should you make a will? Is it when you have a few bob?
Probably that's when most people will start to give it some thought. I would have said yes, either when you have some assets or when you have some responsibilities, because some people will make a will when they have their first child, for example, but they may not necessarily have a significant amount of assets at that time, but one or the other.
Can you make a general will, like I bequeath all I possess to X or Y?
Yes, you can. You can absolutely do that. You just need to be certain that you go through the formalities of properly appointing executors. But certainly you can, and very often people do, simply make a will stating they leave their entire estate to a specific person.
So you don't have to do the A, B, C, D, E and F of your estate if you're doing such a thing.
No, you don't. And very often people will be general in the drafting of a will, rather than be specific about assets, because over time people's assets will change and you don't necessarily want a situation where you have a will referring to a specific bank account, for example, only to find that when the person dies that bank account no longer exists and the beneficiary is wondering, well, where is it and why can't I have it?
Now, suppose you leave designated amounts of cash to various things. Could be charities, could be the, you know, the cats and dogs home. That's always the metaphor for this kind of thing. Could be to individuals. And then it turns out that the total assets don't cover all of the beneficiaries to the full amount. Do they get proportionate amounts or is there a pecking order?
They do get reduced proportionately, and there is a particular pecking order as well. And for example, if you left a specific property to an individual, that property would not fall into the reckoning for being reduced proportionately. So it would just be the monetary legacies that would be reduced in proportion to the amount that was available after all of the debts and taxes had been discharged.
What are the most common mistakes you've come across in people's wills, which can, you know, give rise to rows?
Well, wills, that's a very long question. The short answer is people need to be specific about particular assets. People would often, children of deceased parents would very often look at a will and think, well, why haven't we been treated equally, which is a frequent cause of a row. But as I said, particularly if somebody has left an asset and over time the asset has disappeared, that can also be a cause of concern. But the issues arise as to when potential beneficiaries feel that they haven't been treated equally, and that is mainly where the issues arise.
Now, do you have a right to fair play? I mean, if there is the favourite son or daughter who gets more, I mean, if you've raised your kids and got them through college and they're now in great jobs, and then you leave a big chunk to one and not to the other, at that point, does anyone have any redress?
Well, they do, Pat, but that circumstance happens reasonably frequently. Children do not have any specific entitlement to inherit any particular portion of a parent's estate. What they do get is a right under the terms of the Succession Act, and Section 117 of that Act provides that a child may make a claim against the estate of a deceased parent if the child feels the parent hasn't properly provided for the child, either during the parent's lifetime or under the terms of their will. So that would be where the child's right applies. Yeah. And then it is a matter for that child to show, by reference to the particular circumstances, justifiably, that they have been treated less well than others, taking all of the circumstances into account.
You know, suppose that someone is a hoary 50-year-old, the 80-year-old parent's die and they treat one 50-year-old differently to another 52-year-old in the same family. I mean, mm-hmm. at that point, they're all pretty much done and dusted. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can be cut off without a penny, can't they?
Yes, they can. And that's where the provision of the Act comes in. And a child is a child at any age, even if they're 70, and they have an elderly parent who dies, they could still make the claim under the same provision of the Act if they felt they hadn't been provided for. But it's a long and expensive route to go down.
And you may end up with nothing.
Precisely.
Because once you've raised the kids and so on, the court might say, well, you've done your bit. They all got a good education. They all did this, that and the other. And it's up to them. Because, you know, someone might have squandered everything the parents gave them on the 245 in Kempton Park.
That's precisely the case. And that's why it's always a good idea for a parent who's drafting a will in those circumstances to set out the specific rationale for why they may be treating one yeah. child differently so that the executors, when the time comes, have a point of reference.
Yeah, in other words, if I leave a big chunk of money to someone, they'll squander it on drink and or drugs, or they'll gamble it away. So I'm not doing that.
Not doing that, or if, in those circumstances, if parents have a particular concern, very often what they will do is they will create a trust or leave a life interest in a specific portion of money for a child so that the child can only, for example, have the income from that fund and not the capital sum.
And that is a question from a listener, actually. When should you set up a trust rather than a simple will?
Well, if you have children who are under the age of 18, your will should be set up on the basis that it provides for a trust to be created for the children, because children are not entitled to inherit in their own right until they're a minimum of 18. And very often parents think 18 is too young. So 21 tends, in my experience, to be the relevant age. So if you're dealing with minor children or minor beneficiaries or potentially beneficiaries who have a disability of one form or another such that they wouldn't be capable of managing a bequest themselves, then you're looking at a trust.
Now, does it have any tax benefits or otherwise to set up a trust rather than a will?
Yeah, well, the will... we're talking about two separate things, Pat. You can have what's called an inter vivos trust, which is a trust set up during the lifetime of the person who is creating the trust. That's one thing. But you can have a will trust as well, where it is set up under the terms of the individual's will. It doesn't have necessarily a specific tax benefit because the inheritance tax rates would be the same. But if you're setting up a trust under a will for somebody who has a disability, you do get some benefit because you do avoid a tax called discretionary trust tax, which is another complication.
And this one, my husband has made a will, but its contents are not disclosed to me, his wife. Is it possible to ask what my entitlements will be and then make a will myself based on those entitlements?
It is, of course, possible to ask. As to whether or not the information would be forthcoming is another matter, because a will is, of course, a private personal document. And although in my experience, it wouldn't be uncommon for a couple to come together to discuss mutual wills they wanted to make, it isn't simply a matter that because one is a spouse of somebody that one has the right to know what they've put in their will.
So it's up to the two of them to get it together. There's no compunction on one or the other to disclose. This one from a Cork listener. If both names are on the bank savings accounts and also both names on the deeds of the house, is there any need to make a will at all? If one passes before the other, does it automatically go to the survivor?
The answer is yes. In those circumstances, that would be on the understanding that the property is registered under a concept of joint ownership called tenancy in common. Joint tenancy rather than tenancy in common. But most couples would own it under that concept. So that would automatically pass instantly by survivorship. And equally, joint bank accounts should also pass by survivorship. But I do find over the last year to 18 months that banks have particular requirements, so it would, I think, depend on each individual bank. But in the main, in my experience, the answer would be yes, they would pass automatically.
On the writing of a will, if a house is gifted but no mention of the contents. Is it assumed that the contents are gifted with the house?
I wouldn't have thought so, and I would have thought that would be a matter for the executors to have to deal with.
OK. Who pays the legal costs when the will is challenged?
In the main, I would say that the costs come out of the estate, thereby diminishing the available funds for distribution to all of the beneficiaries. However, it would not be a guarantee, and I think the starting point would have to be that the person who is making the claim against the estate would have to be on notice that they may well find that they have to foot their own bill. But in the main, I would say that they come out of the estate, but there's no general rule about that.
Is there a training course for persons nominated to be executors of a will? Or maybe did the state publish anything like how to act as an executor, how to know the executor who's been chosen is suitably informed or knowledgeable to do the job?
I don't think there's any specific training course. There's lots of reference points online, I imagine. And if people want to discuss the rights and duties of an executor with a solicitor, I'm sure they would be happy to speak to them. But then, of course, you don't need to engage a solicitor to administer an estate, but solicitors would be in a position to give that information.
OK. I'm in my late 50s. My partner has proposed he will move in with me. My will leaves my home to my two children. Is he automatically entitled to a share of the house if I die?
Unless they sign renunciations or disclaimers, a spouse is automatically entitled to a minimum one third share of the estate. So that would be whatever the individual has as assets at the date of their death.
And if they didn't get married but remained living together, does he have any rights at all on the house?
And again, that is somewhat complex. If they live together for more than 5 years and become qualifying cohabitants for the purposes of the Civil Partnership and Certain Rights of Cohabiting Couples Act, I'm sorry, it's so long, of 2010, there would be the possibility that a qualified cohabitant could issue proceedings to seek to be entitled to a claim or a share of the other person's estate. But it's a long and probably expensive process, and I couldn't, it would be on a case-by-case basis as to what the likelihood of success would be.
All right. Well, look, it's a fascinating area and loads more questions coming in. Many of them so complicated that we couldn't do it in the space of an entire 3-hour radio program, never mind in the matter of 15 minutes which we have available to us. But Mark Felton of Felton McKnight Solicitors, thank you very much for joining us.